the ultimate compliment is to be considered an asset by those who know you. But what exactly does that mean? And how do we get there? I believe that there is a less discussed approach to becoming a person of value, a person who is successful, respected by others, and fulfilled. It's somewhere between the hustle culture and the ease and flow of manifestation. This podcast is designed to be a resource for the ambitious, the relentless, and the rare, who are breaking societal norms, going against the grain, and are open to unconventional practices as we study what it takes to be a true asset in every area of life. My hope is that you'll find this podcast unique and like it enough to share it with a friend and maybe even one day join us at one of our in-person events. Enjoy. Are you ready for a podcast episode that is full of reality? Well, here we are. In this podcast episode, I'm really excited to bring it to you. I was actually interviewed on the Project Sapient podcast. Please go check them out. Give them a like, give them a follow. They reached out to me. They gave me an opportunity to have a very real, honest, raw conversation about not only my past and probably the story that you have heard, my rock bottom after being told I couldn't work full-time police work anymore, but they also gave me the opportunity to tell you a more recent story about how when the law enforcement community and the internet seemed to turn and blow up on me and what I went through in 2022, but how I've been able to bounce back and, you know, put my nose down to the grind, keep working, and I'm very happy to report that we're having a big impact on a lot of women everywhere. And I'm very happy to say that I went through some of the darkest times, but we're coming out of that and I'm still here. And the reason I want to share that with you is because I think it's important for you to hear and for you to know, like, no matter what you're going through, please know you just got to hang on. And it's hard when you're going through some stuff, man. It's hard. It's hard when you are the only one with your vision, your dream, your goal, and the whole world is telling you, you know, you're bullshit. Trust me, I've been there. You're going to hear the story. You're going to hear everything I went through. I had so much positive feedback that I had to ask the guys, like, hey, can I throw this on my podcast? Number one, it's been a minute since I have said anything on the podcast. And number two, I need all my people to hear this because I need every person, male or female, does not matter. Whatever you are going through, any kind of adversity that you are facing, I need you to hear this. I need you to hear my story. And in hopes that you can just see that you're not alone, because I can't tell you how alone I have felt in my journey. It doesn't matter. You know, there's a lot of successful people that will sit there and tell you that, you know, gets better and to get through it, but they're so far ahead of me. You know, they're the Andy Frisellas, the David Goggins of the world, right? Like, they're so far ahead of me that I'm like, yeah, well, that's good for you. But there was nobody around me, I felt like, that could relate to anything I was going through. And I felt like such a piece of shit, if I'm just honest, like, you know me, I'm gonna say it like I feel it. And I really overcame. Shout out to retired Navy SEAL Jason Redman. I really overcame, and I'm very excited and very eager to share this journey with you. Before we do that, we have to give a shout out to our sponsor. It's Lady Law Shield. I want you to go look her up. She'll be in the show notes. And let me tell you why, okay? She is a former deputy. She was the first female on her SWAT team. She went through a lot of stuff. She got treated like crap. She hit a rock bottom. And she did something about it. She pivoted, went on to law school, and her focus is helping all men and women in as first responders navigate the employment crap that we go through. Because let's be honest, the reason why cops quit, the reason why cops have mental breakdowns, they have the anxiety, they all the things, has nothing to do with the job. You know that. It has everything to do with the bullshit that we're dealing with inside the culture. And she is a phenomenal resource. Go check her out. Lady Law Shield. You can find her on all social medias. She's constantly putting out amazing information. She does a lot of videos in my private She's an Asset Facebook group. Feel free to join that. Just, you know, so you can catch up on her videos. She's also had several podcast interviews with me on here. So please go check her out. Okay, I'm excited for this podcast episode. I'm excited for you to hear it. Make sure you go check out Project Sapient. Let them know that you listened to this episode if you enjoyed it. Gotta let them know. We gotta give them some love. And as always, if you need anything, autumn@autumnclifford.com. Hit your girl up.
Project Sapient is a podcast meant to engage our brothers and sisters in the law enforcement and military communities in conversations we all know we need to have. All opinions you hear are our own and are protected by the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. They in no way reflect or are meant to reflect the opinion of any specific agency, officer, or service member. Some opinions may be controversial. Listener discretion is advised. Project Sapient, everybody, welcome back. Hello, Jake.
It's a shame we like that song so much, because we could just sit here and jam out for that the whole time and everybody's gonna be like, oh, that's a great podcast, except it's musical hour.
I know, right? Maybe we should do just like a musical hour, just podcast greatest hits.
Podcast greatest hits, or the songs playing in our heads on the middle of a call, like what we're actually thinking, like, yeah, exactly. Oh my god, Anderson. Oh, but that could be really bad. Number one law enforcement podcast in military and podcast is back, thanks to our tens of thousands of listeners. We heard you, and we are back for season 3 again, coming with it full send, and it would not be possible without our partners and supporters, starting with our good friends at AAA Police Supply. Our law enforcement listeners, if you're out there right now listening, looking for a one-stop shop for supplies and duty gear, you need to look no further. Head over to AAAPoliceSupply.com. That's AAAPoliceSupply.com. And use the code HYBRID10 for 10% off every single order you make. And that's not just a one-time code. That's every single time. Use that code HYBRID10. Havoc Journal, our good friends over there, the voice of the veteran community, focusing on current affairs and articles of interest to the public in general and the veteran community specifically, for independent news that gets the facts on everything from geopolitics, science and tech, finance, to contemporary affairs and entertainment. Head over to havocjournal.com, and also make sure and check out our good friends there at the Profiles in Havoc podcast as well. We also want to thank our friends at the Second Mission Foundation, educating, elevating, and advocating for our service community, helping them find their second mission after government service. Head over to secondmissionfoundation.org for more information. I also want to send a personal thanks out to 22 Mohawks, combating veteran suicide by providing assistance to veterans needing help navigating the reentry into the civilian world when they return home from duty, because they're going to throw Iman out of a plane in a couple weeks. And we're going to get to talk about that. Super pumped for that one. I hope they give him a parachute, because it would be nice to follow up with the podcast afterwards. Learn more about what 22 Mohawks is doing at 22mohawks.com. We also want to thank our good friend Kyle Lamb at Viking Tactics. His company is the best tactical gear anywhere, from battle belts to slings and everything in between. Kyle's company offers an elite selection of high-quality, battle-proven tactical gear guaranteed to be ready for you when you need it, every single time the job calls for it. Check them out at vikingtactics.com. And, of course, we want to thank our friends at The Overwatch Project. We all know that suicide is an often impulsive decision, with research showing the majority of survivors saying they thought about it for less than 10 minutes, and firearms are the most lethal tool there is. The Overwatch Project's aim is to put some time and distance between our person in crisis and that tool by doing one simple thing, just fucking asking the question, do you have a plan for your firearms when you're in that dark place? Can we make one together? And will you be my buddy and help me with the same? Head over to overwatchproject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of action and how to just fucking ask. Iman, man, I keep saying it every episode and people think it's hyperbole, but it's not. It's just getting better and better and better every week, and we have a fucking banger lined up today.
I know, they've all been awesome, especially the theme of this season is all centered around resiliency and purpose driven and stuff like that. So it's been really good, and you know, Charlie last episode knocked it out of the park, you know, talking about commander's intent and how you build resiliency within that, being a big time leader, which I think everyone in leadership position, whether you are a commander, a brand new lieutenant, sergeant, brand new to policing, you're now a chief, business leaders, whatever, you just need to listen to that man just crush it when it comes to building that sort of resiliency in your employees.
100%, because you want to have a winning team and a winning formula, and you can't do that unless you're, you know, we talked about it then too, and also with Ted, you know, educating, empowering your people, and disseminating clearly what the commander's intent is, because at the end of the day, it comes down to the troops on the ground, the patrol officers on the street, and they're all people, right? And they're a vast array of different types of people, and every kind of person that could possibly walk the face of the earth can, could, and should potentially be a soldier or a law enforcement officer, or even, I mean, you know, if they really want to kind of work for a living, a firefighter. But you have to have that diversity and that exposure to be able to understand and be a better leader, so you have greater knowledge. And, you know, for today, we're bringing in something that a person that is bringing a perspective that neither you or I could have any concept of at all. No. In any way capacity, because no matter what, every time you and I walk into a room, we're just big, dumb dudes, and we are going polar opposite today. We are bringing in our friend and literal icon, Autumn Clifford, is here with us today. Autumn, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a really nice introduction.
I can do it again to be mean if you want me to.
So we're just big, dumb dudes that walk into a room.
Facts.
You guys.
Those are facts.
So funny.
Exactly. Well, thank you for joining us, Autumn. And so we want to continue this conversation that we've had this entire season about resiliency, about purpose-driven, about, you know, basically looking at oneself, right? It's a lot of internal focusing that would help the external forces, so to speak. And, you know, you have quite the story. I mean, quite the background about, you know, you and what you've done and what you persevered through, being resilient and doing what you do now. So, you know, tell our listeners, you know, when did you start in the law enforcement world?
Well, first off, you guys, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on the show. It's a real honor to be here. And what I really love about what you guys is the community that you support and you give back to. Just all of your partners with this podcast, it's just incredible. So I just want to say, you know, thank you for having me. And so we'll kind of start from the beginning, like you said. So I have about a minute on the road compared to probably you guys. I was only on the road full-time for about 6.5 years before I sustained a career-ending injury. It was pretty quick, and I don't have a good story. I wasn't doing anything cool. I wasn't, like, you know, in a chase, in a fight, anything like that. And I just have, but it's actually quite common. I have a back injury. I have a herniated, torn, and degenerative disc all in my lowest back, and my tear is almost all the way through, or it was prior to intensive therapy. And so I had to get done full-time patrol. And when you are halfway through your master's and you are planning on going into, you know, administration, becoming, you know, a leader, and I was working my way into getting into the detective bureau, it was quite devastating.
Yeah, losing that ability to have control is something that, you know, you don't think about when you're young and seemingly fit and the world's your oyster and you can just work harder and then all of a sudden just bam, it hits you. And I mean, definitely not to go down that rabbit hole too far, but that's been my life since I was 17. The day after I graduated high school is when I blew my knee apart the first time, you know, and it's a rude awakening. Everybody at some point, you get there to where it's, you know, hopefully by your choice and you step away. But for the vast majority of law enforcement officers in particular, average career span is actually under 6 years now, based on the most updated information. You know, it's either burnout or injury, and it's not something, you know, cause it's an extremely high impact job. And thankfully you didn't have it happen on a call, right? Because then the ultimate guilt factor would be your back goes, especially if it's, you know, L4, 5, S1, anything down there. And now you're not only incapable of helping, but you're a liability and potentially in danger, which then puts a whole other level of stress on everybody else there. And that guilt, I know from guys who've been injured in the field that they felt so guilty, you know, because they put their team in harm's way, and that's just not something I want to live with. And I know that that's, you know, so, I mean, in a way you're lucky that it happened off, you know, off the street, but it is something that is, we're not ready for, and we're not well prepared for, you know, what that next phase is. And, you know, it's not fair necessarily, but it doesn't mean fair has nothing to do with it. It just sucks. And there's no real way of getting around it. It just fucking sucks. But the thing that you've done that's incredibly impressive, I mean, you handled a lot better than I did, you know, with my, I mean, I was a fucking shit show for quite a while. You, on the other hand, like, well, okay, this is the new reality, new norm. Let's pivot and go full speed in a direction 90 degrees from here. And I mean, you've been crushing it. I know that that's, you know, partly the presentation of confidence and feeling good about it and all that kind of, you know, that goes to it. And I'm sure that, you know, when the mics are off and the cameras are off and all that kind of stuff, it still fucking sucks. And you would probably wave a magic wand and go right back to work if you could.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Jake, and I really appreciate that. I obviously do very well. But I'm asking it, I would say, you know, for me, being a cop since I've been 20 years old, I turned 21 in a cruiser. And, you know, at the time I thought that was so cool. Looking back, I'm like, what? That really wasn't cool. It should have been turning 21 in a bar somewhere. Right. You know, so what, you know, this back injury, and you're right, like it wasn't on a call, but it was, I noticed it. It was so funny. I started noticing the effects of it about a year prior to me actually coming off the road. And I'll tell you a funny story. Well, really not funny, but so what would happen is after a while of me putting my duty belt on, my legs would go numb, and specifically my thighs. And it had been happening so much, I kind of thought it was normal. So one day we're in briefing and we're all kind of just shooting the shit I don't know what your briefing is or was like, but let me just tell you about mine. It was all a bunch of bullshit. And so everybody is literally bullshitting. And I just remember being like, hey, and I'm talking to the guy next to me. I'm like, hey, like, are your thighs numb? Like, is this like normal? And I was kind of being funny. And I just remember the whole room looking at me and my sergeant being like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm kind of serious. And everyone's like, our legs are not numb. That is not normal. And I'm like, oh, well, I kind of thought that's just what our duty belts did. And they're like, no. And then I just laughed it off. And I'm like, oh, I must be. And, you know, especially, you know, you don't want to be that girl. You don't want to be that officer, right? Who's complaining and all the things. And so I just kind of was like, oh, okay, this is weird. And then I just noticed like, okay, I can't, like bending over, like, you know, to put my boots on would actually start to hurt my lowest back, because it is, you're right, it's my L5S1, I believe. And so it was just different things were hurting, right? Prolonged periods of time of sitting in my cruiser, excruciating, prolonged standing. I couldn't do it. And then you tack on the extra 20 pounds with the uniform. And I mean, I was in really bad shape, and I hid a lot of it for a long time because I didn't want to be that person. And I was like, what is wrong with me? Like, I'm 26. Like, I'm young. What is going on? You know, I worked out all the time. I was healthy, all these things. And so, you know, when that did happen and my doctor was like, yeah, you're done full time, get off the road, because what if you get into a fight or a crash tonight? What if the tear goes all the way through? Autumn, do you understand the repercussions? And I'm like, I don't, but I, you know, at the time, you guys, I didn't care. Cause I was like, I don't care. I'm going to keep doing it. And he's like, okay. So you want to, you know, potentially be paralyzed, lose function in your legs. Is it worth it to you? And I'm like, oh, I guess not. So then essentially overnight after the results of my MRI, I was done. And just like very much like what, you know, you've experienced, Jake. I mean, that was devastating, and I may make it look easy. But I was couch ridden for 6 months, and I'm going to tell you, I was in a real dark place.
Wow. Were you still technically on the job, or they pulled you off by then?
I was on short term disability for a while, while we figured things out.
All right. So they gave you like an admin position then, or you just stayed home?
Yeah. So at the time they didn't even have an admin position. And quite honestly, I really couldn't do anything except lay down there was a time where, you know, and I'm not going to say like, It wasn't that my agency in the beginning wasn't trying to work with me. I mean, I did have, I'm not going to lie to you, there was some really asshole moments that occurred, but then they would come back and then there was some really kind moments too, but they just didn't understand to the extent of what I was going through. And their own workers' comp doctor told me that I was faking. This is prior to MRI, right? Which my doctor ordered because he knew me and he knew like, this is crazy. Like we need to get this, you know, she told me that I was faking and to go do hot yoga and I would be fine.
Wow.
Right. So I don't know. So, and that's, and I would just like to say, anybody listening to this, that's exactly what workers' comp is designed to do. Yeah. So if you're going through this, or if, you know, I know a lot of officers that go through this, they are designed to make you feel like shit. Mm-hmm. They're designed to make you feel like you are faking. You are the problem so that you can just get back to work and nothing happens.
Well, they don't have to pay out. I mean, it's, yeah, 1,000 because it's expensive. That's why they want you gone.
That sounds a lot suspiciously like my experience with the VA at the comp and pen department. That's when you file for all your injuries, whatever happened to you at war, all that good stuff. They literally make you feel like a piece of shit, and you're committing like stolen valor and all that. Like, talk about mentally breaking someone down, you know.
This workers' comp doctor had me crying in her office, and I'm like not a big crier. And I'm like, I walked out of there and I'm like, why am I crying? But she just was like, you know, you're faking. You're what's wrong with this department. You're what's wrong with society. Like, you're going to be that girl. You're really going to be that girl. Like, you really want that reputation. And I'm like, oh my God, no, I don't. Get me out, you know? Wow. And, but yeah, I mean, so very much amen. Just like that.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, for me, my experience in the VA, it took me going to a private practice to actually get them to listen.
Same.
That's unbelievable. Like so many similarities.
Well, and what's funny is where does that come from? Right. Because if her response is that caustic, that's probably because overwhelming majority of things and people that she makes contact with are trying to play that line, right? They are trying to, and instead of treating the individual patient and actually tracking what that individual patient and caring for that individual patient, she's playing a numbers game. Yes, the overwhelming majority of people are full of shit. They want to pay out. Okay, well, that doesn't make it a standard rule for everybody. And it also, my favorite joke is, you know what they call the person that got C in medical school? Yeah, doctor. Not all doctors are good. Some doctors fucking suck. Mm. Surgeons want to cut. Hammers want to hit nails. They're not all great. And if you're sitting there and listening to this person, you know, trying to disempower your observation of your body, you know, again, someone who trains, someone who's been on the road, you know what you're doing. You know what this is wrong. Right. People need to trust what they're feeling. They might not know what the answer is, and don't go on Google because you're going to find all sorts of shit.
Everything. But you're going to die. All the answers are you're going to die.
Yeah,
that is the answer.
You're going to have like this, you know, the seventh circle of hell of, you know, you might have this type of tumor and cancer from, you know, cell phone radiation from carrying your iPhone in your back pocket, whatever. Yeah. But the doctor, you know, there are shitty doctors. People have a hard time buying that. And it's like, well, just because you haven't had enough experience with them. But yeah, that's just, it's disappointing that, but also not surprising because what's their vested interest? Their vested interest is in supporting the organization, the union, you know, not the officer,
not the people.
Yeah. And that's fucked because you're immediately set up for failure as the customer, the injured party of getting adequate, not just representation, but observation. Are you reading these films correctly? You know, and I don't know how your process went, but I've gone through enough now that it's anytime I hear somebody like, yeah, so I went and saw the doctor and they said I need surgery. I'm like, good, go to 3 more doctors. Go to 3 more fucking surgeons, not in the same practice. Find three. If all three tell you the same thing, pretty good chance that's what you need.
Yeah. But
more often than not, it's you're gonna get 3 different opinions. Then it's like, oh well, we need to dig even deeper. You know.
Yes.
And your situation was almost the opposite. It was like, no, I actually need somebody to read these films. I need somebody to look at this. How the fuck can she or he have X-ray vision or MRI vision and know that you're faking it? Bullshit. Well, get images first and then be an asshole. But
that was the thing. Well, they didn't want to pay for the imaging,
yeah,
right? And right. So. 100%. And I wish like, you know, and like what you just said, Eamon, like too, like I wish our stories were unique, but they're not, they're simply not. And
very similar.
It's And it's what's going on. So yeah. Like, you know, anybody listening to this who has been through it or is going through it. I know a lot of officers actually going through workers' comp situations. Like, just know it's what they're trying to break you down. They're trying to humiliate you. My agency actually coming to find out this was done illegally. And I didn't know that until about recently. So like 8 years later, I don't know. Can't do math. Less than 8 years. So like 5 years later, that when I was going through this, and obviously it's a workers' comp thing, so there was a lawsuit, okay? And I guess my chief at the time put out an email to the entire agency telling them not to speak to me, not to talk with me under any circumstances. And here's the thing. And any officer who is listening to this is going to understand that, like, you spend 60 hours a week of your life with these people and you develop relationships. Like my partner, he was my best friend. And him and his wife uninvited me from their wedding and he was the union president. And so he was just in a precarious situation, but our friendship, it's completely gone because of that. And, you know, and just different people. And, you know, like as people have gotten done at the agency and all these things, they come and they tell me shit. And they're like, yeah, well, we got told we couldn't talk with you. And like, that was a big thing. Like you were a no-no. And I'm like, because I got hurt. And so now I'm a piece of shit, which is what we all don't want to deal with. But yet, you know, that honestly, some agencies perpetuate that, you know,
big time. That's I see that. Day in and day out, different agencies are just different animals, and a lot of high school type drama, I call,
yes.
You know, and it's really stupid because we're all supposed to be professionals, right? We're all supposed to be the top percentages of society, you know, however they want to market us. But you break it down to the human level, we're all just people, right? That's 100%. All we are. And the high school drama shit is what drives me out of my mind. At any agency, including my own, you know, that's like, hey, stop. You know, that's the thing. Like, now I'm a sergeant at work. And, you know, I had a patrol officer come up to me just over some bullshit. Just like he said, she said, he said, he said type shit. And I looked at him. I'm like, you really want me to fucking deal with this? I was like, unless you're a grown ass man and you go fucking handle it yourself. You know, like, mm-hmm. like stop, you know. And it's too bad that it's kind of like a, I'll call it nationwide plague or something where it's just not Northeast, South, West Coast. It's just everywhere.
Everywhere. And I think we could agree too. Like that is the shit that is causing cops to leave.
Oh, 100%. You know?
In swarms and to commit the suicide and to do all these things. I mean, you know, you talk to any cop. And we all have hard calls, right? Yep. And we've all had, you know, and I'm not saying that there aren't some calls that haven't impacted and created some sort of, you know, PTSD, but I will say, you know, and I've coached hundreds of fucking cops now in my professional career as a coach. And I will say this, it is not the calls that mess us up.
Yep.
It is the departmental bullshit that does.
Yep. Yeah, the calls are more of a catalyst, right? Because you've got, the way you respond to something. And in this case, it's even more fucked up because it wasn't like you were in an OIS or something where, you know, it's like, oh, we can't talk to her because it's IA and it's, you know, you did something bad. You know, really naughty. You got hurt. And then that's the response, which is a systematic response, which is how they're treating everybody. Anytime everybody steps out of line of whoever is in the command seat thinking that it's out of line, to then turn it into like what you just said, now you're stripping away all of that community, all of that support structure, everything, you know, while yes, the calls themselves are, you know, at times the worst. Mm-hmm. The only thing that gets you through, I mean, we literally joke about, you know, you've got your core group and your fucked up humor and mm-hmm. you get through it together because you're all having a shared experience. As soon as you isolate, holy shit, that's like literally throwing fuel on a fire for a major issue with the individual person and knowingly doing so knowingly. Like they're literally like, oh, we're going to separate and isolate because we want you to take care of yourself. And another way of saying that is to get the fuck out and we don't want to be bothered by you.
That's what it was. 100%.
Yeah.
So can you expand on that, even if it's in generalities, just in the, you know, I mean, there's all the buzzword terms, you know, harassment and bullying and everything. And it's kind of like, those are real adjectives and they have real meaning. And sometimes they actually do apply because people start to hear that word and they just tune out. And it's like, hey, actually tune in and listen. Because if I hear, you know, well, bullying, okay, well, that's, you know, shit, if you watch The Bachelor, like everybody's getting bullied every fucking 5 minutes, but it's like, that's not really bullying, but it actually is an occurrence. It is a thing, as is the harassment. Those are very real things that have been weaponized in a different capacity. But can you talk on that a little bit, even if without specifics, if you want to, but just in general terms of just, because sometimes you don't understand or you don't identify, this is what's happening to me in the moment, right? You're in that environment. You don't realize that that's actually what's happening to you. And I think that there's officers out there that if they hear it from you, because I've heard you speak on this, they might identify like, oh, fuck, that's me. I'm in that right now. Oh, I need help.
And I think, you know, I just want to say this, like, this is not my area of expertise. I will say this. I will talk about it. Absolutely. But anybody who, like, especially, you know, any officer who's might be potentially going through this, I would just like to shout out and have you actually look up. Her name is Bridget Truxillo, and she's with Lady Law Shield. She's an attorney. She was a deputy. She was the first female on her SWAT team down in Florida. And then she underwent serious, like, sexual harassment and being singled out and all these things. So then she pivoted and said, fuck all y'all, I'm going to law school. And now I know she fights for male and female officers, you know, just to make sure they're, you know, equality in the workplace. So look her up for her, 'cause she's definitely an expert on it. But let me share with you some experiences. You know, anytime you're being singled out, okay, we have to talk about that. And we have to ask, like, why are we singling people out if we're the ones doing it? You know, and there's ways to do it. So if there is, you know, if you have a subordinate, if you have a coworker that is causing issues, you don't need to single them out publicly. You know, it's a sidebar conversation. It's private stuff. And let's get on their level and let's figure out what's going on with them. But what I've been through personally, and again, this is, I guarantee you, many officers, female officers can say this, but just different things I've been through. I was, I'll tell you this story about briefing one day. So well, I'm on overnights. We all get in there at about 10. We go, you know, we go on shift 10, 8 at 10:30. And I'm pretty close with my sergeant. Like, he and I have a great relationship. And so he didn't mean for it, I don't think, to be derogatory, but boy, it was. I was eating a hard boiled egg, and I think we all know, like, they don't smell the greatest, right?
Facts.
And so I'm eating hard boiled egg, and like, he walks into the briefing room, and again, there's my whole shift, dispatch, everything. And he's like, Clifford, close your fucking legs.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what did you just fucking say to me? Like, and like, listen, whether I, you know, was sleeping around or not, it's completely, it does, none of that even matters, right? Just the fact that my supervisor just said that, and then in front of all these people, is insane. But just, because I know everybody's curious, I've been happily married with my husband. We've been together for 11 years. I wasn't sleeping around, but he was just being a guy, kind of treating me like one of the guys. And like, I didn't make a big deal of it. Like, my eyes were about the big of fucking half dollars. 'Cause I'm like, I can't believe you just said this. But then we all just started laughing, and he got immediately, like, as soon as it rolled off his tongue, he got really red because he realized, like, oh God, she's a girl. Like, what did I just do? Right. And I just want to say, like, I wasn't upset. I mean, I was a little offended in the beginning. I'm like, what in the fuck? Why did he say that? But then I just realized whatever. So I've been through situations like this. I've been embarrassed. Did I do anything about it? Nah. Did he actually mean it? No. But you're going to go through situations like this, and you have to make decisions on intent. And like, and let me say, if I was offended, I would have sidebarred with him. I'd have had a sidebar. Because that's how I am. I'd have been like, hey, like, what the fuck? And then if it continued, I'd be documenting that stuff just for anybody listening. Right. you know, I've, and I'm not an easy person. Right. And I, looking back now that I've been out of the job and I'm who I am, like I have an opinion and I have a mouth, and it doesn't mean I'm rude or disrespectful, but I'm going to ask you, you know, I have asked my sergeants, like, why are we doing this? Because this doesn't make sense to me. And they would get mad because I was taking time away from their video games. I'm not kidding you. They would spend 8 hours on my shift playing fucking video games. And I want, you know, and then they're mad at me for questioning them. Right. Like, so I've been singled out that way. They're all going to, my whole shift is going to eat together, but I have to be out on the road and I'm not invited and I have to patrol. Why am I getting singled out? Right. Like that doesn't make sense. You know, just different things like that have happened. And I know that women can relate to that and men too, I'm sure. And that is the stuff though, that causes that turmoil as a police officer. Like, why doesn't my shift like me? Why don't I fit in? Like, why are they singling me out? Why is this dispatcher an asshole to me? And then, but because he's boys with my supervisor, I'm getting spoken to when I wasn't out of line. The dispatcher was out of line, but I'm not boys with my sergeant because he plays fucking video games and I'm doing circles around him and I'm the one getting right. So we all know that. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, but like, I mean, like as a sergeant, right. I my shift could be up to 15, 20 officers, right? And it's a mix officers, whatever. And I shoot the shit with everybody, right? That's just the way I am. Especially during roll call, I'll do the briefing, I'll do the training, because I always do roll call training for all the officers. And then, you know, in between there, I'll throw jabs at different officers, just, you know, jokingly, right? All joking, but yeah. You know, it reminds me of a quick story I'll share. We had an armed robbery, and we have one of the brand new officers. Now I was incident commander, you know, kind of managing the scene, and I hear her over the air call in a disabled motor vehicle in the middle of this armed robbery, where I'm expecting my officers to start coming to me while, you know, set a perimeter, stuff like that. So I let it go, and then a couple days later, I went through the log. I'm really curious. You had different opinions from different sergeants. They're like, oh, you need to write her up. You need to. I'm like, slow the fuck down. Like, let me first see what the hell was going on, you know, and I'm not the type that yells and, like, because I've been yelled at, but it's stupid, you know. To me, it's very juvenile when you start yelling and screaming, because I lose a lot of respect for someone, especially a superior cop or a military command, when you're screaming.
100%.
You're not in control of yourself, and therefore I have no fucking reason to give you any respect, right?
Right.
Now, again, I don't like yelling. Only maybe one time. It was a crazy, crazy thing, but anyway, so couple days later, the officer's back at work. I bring her into my office, and, you know, into the commander's office, and I just kind of just talked to him, like, hey, so what happened with this? You called in a disabled car, but, you know, we had that armed robbery. And she's like, you know what? I knew I was wrong. Like, I should have just kept driving, because I know you needed, you know, other officers, stuff like that. And I, you know, I was like, all right. You know, so one, you knew you were, you know, you admitted you, yeah, and it was fine with me. I'm like, okay, you know, I told her, I said, listen, I know you're brand new, like a year and a half on the job. You're still learning this job. But, you know, I gave her a quick, you know, some tips and advice on how to handle these types of things. And then that's it. I was done. I'm like, I'm not putting pen to paper for something like that. You know, that's nothing major. I mean, the only time I ever really raised my voice was we had a crime scene tape up, dead body in the water. Like, you know, it was intense. And I needed more crime scene tape. So I look at one of the officers. I'm like, hey, go grab the crime scene tape. And he was still standing there. And it pissed me off, because I've got all kinds of things I'm trying to manage. I yell at him. I'm like, hey, I thought I told you to grab the effing, you know, the fucking tape. And he's like, oh, okay, I'm going. I'm like, so those instances, I'm like, I don't have time to take you aside. Like, I told you to do something, just go do it. And then later on, I took him aside. You know, I was like, hey, just, you understand why I had to yell, because I was dealing with 10 million things and you standing there was not helping. And so to me, I come from a place of training, right? Always training, always teaching people, because I've made those fuck ups myself, right? You know, so that's the thing with this job, you are going to fuck up. And this job is stressful enough on the road where I don't need to bring it back into the station, right? And that's the thing that gets missed, is we deal with, again, shitty, intense situations. And 9 times out of 10, it's not the situation that gets to us, it's the aftermath, meaning what happens when I walk back into that station. You know, how am I going to get talked to? Because physiologically, you're still, or mentally, you're still hurting from, let's say, Sid's death for a couple days, right? It sucks, you know? And your bosses are just on top of you constantly. You know, why the fuck, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, dude, like, give me a minute. You know, leave me be. So those are just my quick stories on a couple of those things.
No, it's good. Go ahead, Jake.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say, Autumn, because you bring up a good point with that Iman just hit, you know, square on the head as usual, even though, yes, no, he does not yell. But I've heard the volume of his knife hand firsthand. That knife hand comes out.
Oh, yeah, that knife hand.
It's like, it is.
Did incredible. I do the knife hand when I was saying that story?
Oh, no, it was close.
I was close to doing it. All right.
The knife hand comes out. It's like, that's his version of yelling. It's just sign language yelling. It's like, I'm going to put you with the fucking thing. So, you know, the educational component, and I, you know, Autumn, we've been talking about the last couple episodes, Commander's Intent. You were being penalized, for lack of a better term, for inquiring as to why. Maybe your level of inquiry or the verbiage that you used was, you know, more like mine would be like, that's fucking stupid, Sergeant. Why would I do that? Well, maybe I might have said it better, but it was fucking stupid, so I said it anyways. But the point of that is that your leadership is not disseminating information in a way that's empowering you to understand what the fuck's going on. And you are seeking more knowledge, and you're seeking more knowledge so you can do your job better. And if you do your job better, you are a better community police officer for the people who are your customers. That shouldn't ever be penalized. The flip side of that is being part of that, you know, if you were more of the, let's say, a good old boy group, right? And you ask that same question, you're probably getting an answer.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality is you're probably getting an answer. And how do you navigate that line? Like all the way back to the egg conversation, right? I mean, part of me, again, being a boy for my entire life, at least as far as I know, the hard part for me is like, okay, if I'm not included in the jokes and somebody's not making fun of me in that kind of locker room, team room, you know, vibe, what's wrong with me? Right. Mm-hmm. Like what am I doing wrong that I am not part of the group? Fuck. Like, I, you know, that's a big red flag for me that I'm doing something that is not, you know, cool. I mean, that goes all the way back to high school. You know, I didn't drink and I was invited to parties because I didn't drink. It had nothing to do with the fact that I needed alcohol to do dumb shit. I could do dumb shit sober. That was totally fine. I was always that way, you know, but the part is that because I was different, I wasn't included. And because I wasn't included, you know, it was really tenuous, and it's, you feel like you're walking on eggshells because you're obviously not part of the clique. I fucking hate cliques. I hate group. I hate all that shit, but they did exist. And how did you find yourself navigating that? Cause you know, even you said like, yes, you laughed. And then at the same time, it's like, well, fuck, I am offended because that is a shitty joke. But then if I was a guy, it, you know, like if I heard that, I'd be like, oh, okay. You know, it's like, I wouldn't wear it the same way because I'm a boy. All going into building into because of that, and then down the line with the other, you know, engagements with the superior officer asking actual questions about work, not fuck off questions about eggs. How did you parse through that, or did you not realize it until after looking back?
So I'm going to give you, I realized it. I'm going to give you an answer that I think now that I, you know, have been off the job, I've done a few things, I've grown up a little bit, and I'm gonna give you this answer. This wouldn't have been the answer that young officer or just injured officer would have said. And what I did, here's what I think. I coach a lot of women who go through this. They might be the only woman at their agency, or they're just not in the club. There's a lot of men who are not in the club. Okay. So this also is true. This is not just for women, but I am going to speak on my experience. I think that we just put way too much identity into this job, and if you take a step back and we big picture it, what are you up to? What are you doing in your life? What is your vision for yourself? And what's your focus? What are you here to do? And if you can just take a step back and really get clear on that, right? And then, you know, so you get clear what your focus is, what your purpose is, what are you here to do? And then you can take that to the job and you can focus. Listen, a lot of bullshit happens in police work because we have too much time, right? We're not busy enough, especially since COVID, right? I know, you know, I haven't been on the road, but I do know that since COVID, like a lot of mandates came out. Don't be stopping cars. We're not going to all these calls. We're going to, you know, and idle hands are not good for anybody, and especially police officers. And so, you know, you come back to work and you have a focus. Now, I'm going to give you an example. Maybe you are really interested in dogs and you really, you know, and personally you love dogs. And that's kind of what led you to want to be in law enforcement. That's like, you could never, you're like, I can't sit behind it, you know, a desk. I don't know how to hunt. And I'm in shape and I really want to be a canine handler. And so you just start focusing, right? And you start focusing where you want to go and you start building that resume and you start getting out there and doing the work that needs to be done to get you to where you need to go while simultaneously developing allies, developing friends by being a friend. Look, when we're insecure, which we all can be, so me too, I'm not innocent, but when we're insecure and we're coming from a place of being on defense because we're so worried about what everybody else thinks of us, we are shitty leaders. We're shitty friends. And we are that officer that we don't want to be around, right? And we start talking shit. And we'll go and we'll try to talk shit about that officer with this officer because you're trying to be a friend with that officer. And the whole thing, honestly, is why the culture is the way that it is. So I'm just saying, if you want to combat that, take a step back, you know, refocus. Where do you want to go in your life? And then take that to the job. Be the friend, be the officer who you want to be friends with. And if you do your job and you're a good person to everybody, people will like you, you know, and you might not be in the club. And quite frankly, you won't be so focused on it, right? If you yourself have your own focus.
Yeah, I mean, I see that a lot. I mean, I'm almost getting to 20 years on the job. So, you know, over the years that I've been on, I've seen that a lot, obviously, right? Depending, like, I used to work for the transit police here in Boston, and that culture all by itself was like, holy shit. But even no matter what, you know, guys who transfer a ladder or whatever, they always feel the green, you know, the grass is always greener on this side, but then they go there and they find out it's the same bullshit, you know? And that's the thing is we as a profession, right, because it's 90% boredom, 10% action, that 90% boredom is what gets everybody jammed up, right? Whether it be gossiping or just spreading bullshit and whatever else, it gets everybody in trouble. And a lot of times, officers internalize it and just hold it in, right? And not mm-hmm. really convey their concerns, right? Or mm-hmm. not really come back and tell the sergeant, hey, that was a little fucked up, dude. You know, like, or not mm-hmm. even really addressing, you know, or even, you know, a chief of police yelling and screaming at his officers where the other, you know, the officer is like, who the fuck are you? Like, why are you yelling? Like, you know, and it's not yelling and screaming about like civil rights violations or, you know, you know what I mean? It's just like, oh, he didn't dot this I and cross that T, right? It's nothing that is earth shattering that happens on the job internally, right? Internally inside the job that would cause someone to become the way they are, right? And the only reason why they become the way they are is because, again, I know I'm saying two different things, but it's the internal stuff that gets you more, right? That mm-hmm. bullshit where dot the I, cross the T, do that. And I, you know, I see it all the time. And you know, even like, you know, a few instances, I know a friend of mine dealing with whatever, just like, really? They're hounding you for that? You're like, come on. Like, it's far more important things to worry about than that minor detail or that little thing. But, you know, I always go back to also telling cops, like, because you internalize so much that there's a famous quote. I like it a lot. It's by Seneca, and he says, we suffer more in imagination than in reality. So when we mm-hmm. internalize that, over and over and think about it over and over and not even bringing it up, what is that creating right there, right? A stressor right. that shouldn't even be there. Mm-hmm. So that, so well, that,
pivoting,
yeah.
pulling, yeah, going on that thread, the question I have for you, Autumn, you know, you've got so many factors coming into play with your experience, right? You've got you're young. I mean, when you were on, right? 20, you said you turned 21 in the car, right? So, I mean, not that many trips around the sun, definitely not that many trips in any adult capacity, right? Compared to now, you would probably, I would say, agree that you, if you started the job now with what you know now, you'd probably been a better cop first year than you were as your first year person. I would be, right? Like, I would be so much better. And I felt like I did a pretty good job. Like, I tried really hard, right? But I know part of it's parenting too. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, you get kids and shit changes and you get better or worse. It depends on how you do it. But you would be better now starting than had you, you know, prior to. And that, you know, with the entirety of the department, that culture, that ecosystem, with the overwhelming spotlight that has now been presented on, I always want to say our industry, but it's the industry, because we're all, you know, I'm out, you're out. The crossing the T's, the dotting the I's. If you make one little microscopic mistake, you're going to be fucking crucified, whether it's on press, social media, what, right? I mean, it's, and we talk about this, we even talked about this before the podcast, like we're not here to put anybody on blast, like, but that's what the fucking culture is now. If you make one simple mistake and not, you know, with no intent, you're fucked. Mm-hmm. You're going to be put out on blast and it's all over. Mm-hmm. And it ruins lives. I mean, yes. It legitimately ruins lives. And to your point of, I don't know that there's another way to do the job, but to be fully invested in, because it's so fucking hard, right? Mm-hmm. You're not getting called to or dispatched to somebody's birthday party where it's hand out stickers and have a hamburger, right? It's mm-hmm. like, no, shits. I mean, especially the overwhelming majority called, well, out here, it's overdoses, but more across the average is domestic violence calls. Mm-hmm. Horrendously awful, shitty situations that you have to show up to and be perfect. Because mm-hmm. if you're not perfect, you're getting strung, you're getting, you know, let out and let go at best, or charged with a crime as an off, you know, at worst. And obviously we go back to the biggest exemplification of that all with what happened in Minnesota. And I think that cultural focus, which hasn't really gotten softer, it's only magnified. I don't know how you do this job as a 20-year-old, a 21-year-old, a 22-year-old, 23. No shit, recruiting's down. They look at it like, why the fuck would I go there? Why the fuck would I step into that arena of pure just abuse? Mm-hmm. Not within necessarily, I mean, if you can find a good department, a good group to work with, you know, because there are phenomenal departments to work for and with, mm-hmm. but just as a, you know, that thin blue line is very real. It's very thin. There are very few overall, but it's so impossibly hard to do that job well without making a mistake, because it's not really possible. How, and I'm trying to think of the best way to articulate this without, you know, going way too far down the rabbit, but how do you work with your officers that you're counseling, or even, you know, the people coming out, you know, away from the profession or going towards it? How do you counsel them on navigating that, because of the overwhelming, just razor thin line of margin for making a fucking simple mistake?
So I coach. I don't counsel.
Right, sorry, coach. Yeah, I mean,
no, it's okay. I just
not as an official counselor. Yes, coaching. Yeah, but yes,
yeah.
providing counsel. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, listen, stakes are high. The stakes are high. And everybody is under video, right? Everybody's being watched. And I think, you know, here's the thing. I think I don't really have a great answer for it, Jake, because it's really hard. You know, my husband, he's a sergeant in our state police, and we have a lot of conversations about this. And, you know, our people are human. Our officers are human, and they're going to make mistakes. And that's the truth. I think that common sense goes a long ways. And I think that being respectful, I will tell you this. I'm coaching a young officer, and she's really wonderful, and she's a great, great girl and great officer. But I don't know what she did. She told me a story, but she left out some things And I said this to her. I said, I don't care how big, bad, and tough you are. You need to be respectful. And that you be respectful when you roll up on a call is going to get you further than being able to whoop everybody's ass and 100%. Being Bruce Lee. Yeah. Yeah. And you're not going to scream at anybody at all. And, you know, we had this conversation of and you have to understand, you know, I was just, you know, explaining to her, like, you know, when you're a woman and you're, especially you're young and you're trying to prove yourself, right? In this job, we're always trying to prove ourselves. And when you're the underdog, when you're the only female, and when, you know, maybe you've made some mistakes. And so all the guys are kind of looking at you like, do you got it or not? Can you do this? Do you have my back or not? And at the end of the day, I just want to say this, like, that's really what we need to know. Like, we need to know, like, can you do this job and have my back when shit hits the fan or not? Period. The end. Male, female, doesn't matter. I don't care. That's what we need to know. And that's what I tell my girls. I'm like, that's really what the bottom line is we need to know that. And there's indicators, you know, we talk about pre-attack indicators, right? Yeah. But there's like pre-shit calls indicators that people do that would give us the inkling like, oh God, they're going to be more of a liability than an asset to me. And I was explaining that to her and I was like, so, you know, you're not going to yell at anybody. And she's like, you know, but I went to this bar fight and I was the only female. I'm like, I don't give a shit. You what are you going to yell about? The victim is going to find you because you are a flag in your uniform. They're coming to you. Well, people were coming up to me. Well, of course they're going to come up to you because they're looking for direction. So if you can just understand, there's a big difference between having a commanding presence and yelling and really overasserting yourself. And we had this really beautiful conversation and she's like, wow, that makes so much sense. Like, thank you. Like, I didn't have anyone to have this. Nobody told me this. And I'm over there trying really hard to, you know, I'm trying. And so I think, you know, Jake, I have a lot of those kinds of conversations. Like, hey, that goes a lot further. And guess what? On camera, that looks a lot better. And people are going to like you. So when you do make the mistake, because we're going to make them, we all make them. If you're at least humble and kind and respectful, you know, the citizens are going to be a little bit more apt to be like, you know what? All right, Clifford, like you messed up, but you've been really good to me. So like, I'm not going to report you or call your sergeant or, you know what I mean?
So kind of follow up on that as obviously male officer here, right? I'm a big dude. Mm-hmm. I tend to, things happen the way I want it to happen because just mere presence, I guess I'll call it, you know, I'll show up on a call even as a sergeant and it'd be like, all right, we're not fucking around. Like, you know, this dude is not the type. And even if you do, they learn really hard and really well what happens.
They learn hard.
Yeah. Yeah. They learn.
They chose violence.
Yeah, exactly. One time, actually, I called Jake. I'm like, dude, I had a dude choose violence today, and it did not work out for him.
And I'm just like, yes.
So, but what I don't know if it's just, again, perception, right? Perception's big. Do you find that with female officers, because of their size, their height, all that stuff, they get trained or they have to project themselves a certain way in order to get, let's say, compliance, which, like you said, you don't really need to yell and scream to gain compliance. I tell all my troops this, compassion goes a long way. I was like, use of force incidents for me, 20-year career, maybe a handful. I don't get into too many. When I do, it is what it is, but that's the thing.
Well, I would like to say, Eamon, right? And for you, like, because you have nothing to prove. You already know if you someone wants to choose violence on you, it's like, all right, let's go. Like, yeah. That's your choice, right? Yeah. And so here's my personal opinion. I think not enough female officers, not enough of our even younger officers, right? Our smaller statured male, female, doesn't matter. They haven't been hit in the fight. They haven't been knocked out. You haven't been punched in the face. You haven't been in enough fights because I can already tell. Like, we all know, we have a mutual friend who is this kick ass peanut.
Honey badger.
I call her honey badger.
Yep. But you know what? You can already tell she rolls up on a call and she is not going to scream at you.
No.
And she's, you know, she's not doing any of that because she knows if they chose violence, yep, she's going to handle her shit.
She's going to deliver.
Yeah.
So I think, and she's little, like she's a peanut.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's really truly that, which is why my biggest advice is, are you in martial arts? No, go. I don't care if it's boxing, jujitsu, kickboxing, go get the shit kicked out of yourself. Yeah. You need 3 or 6 months of that minimum. Like for some reason, like we need more. We all know that, but like trying to get them in there. And I just think it makes such a difference.
Yeah. I think ego goes into it because they're going to get their asses handed to them at the gym by, you know, other people. It is what it is. I mean, I grew up since I was in the fifth grade in the martial arts world, whether it be kickboxing, boxing, whatever. And man, does it humble you when you get rocked in the face, you know, when you're doing full contact sparring. But with that said, though, at the same time, you're now gaining confidence. You're like, oh, I know what to do. I felt this before. I'm not going to die if I get punched in the face, you know. So there's certain things, and you're right. If you got to go on the mats. I tell all the officers, I don't care what you do. Go do boxing. Like, I don't care. Just
me too.
Go, same. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and that same mutual friend, she'll be the first one. And we've said it in seminars to other officers, you know, she wants to make sure that you're also at the same time you do all that training, all that, you know, which is in a controlled environment, and that you're not getting a false sense of confidence over what you're capable of doing. Cause she'll say it dead in the face of everybody that we're with. She wouldn't fuck with somebody my size. And I'm not that big. I'm 6'4". You know, when I was on patrol, I was 225-ish, you know, lighter now. But she's like 30 seconds. And I mean, this is a person who literally has fought professionally and been in some significant, serious shit as a law enforcement officer. She's like, I'm not fucking tussling with that guy, right? Just because you've got confidence in a skill set on a mat doesn't necessarily translate into the real world, because if you don't have that experience, you're going to go to the false sense of confidence, then you're going to be in real trouble.
Yes.
And I that's why we love having her on our team, because it brings that reality back in. Is like, yes, at the end of the day, no matter what your selected pronouns are, there is 6'4", 200 plus pounds versus 5 foot nothing. We'll say 110 pounds in duty gear.
Right.
If she doesn't have tools to equalize that playing field, she's fucked. And she'll be the first one to say it. And you can scale that up to any other, you know, we have another officer we worked with in our female only trainings, damn near 6 feet tall, super strong in certain capacities, not others. And, you know, we do a lot of really tough stress inoculation combatives. And the plus side is that, you know, on the coaching side, we can make them work as hard and as long as we want to, and we can put them into problems. Right. And so where you can see the disconnect of what they learned in DTs in their department versus what, like, our mutual friend have trained on them, you know, for the last 3 days, some shit that works because you're in a willing participation with a sparring partner doesn't fucking work if the person decides they don't want it to work. Yep. And having that overconfidence then puts you into a fucking jam. And, you know, to your point, Autumn, you know, being competent means exposing yourself to positions and situations to where you are at a massive disadvantage, and you need to fucking critically think, or you're not an asset to anybody, let alone yourself. You're an actual danger.
Yeah.
You know, 1000%. I've been in the martial arts since I've been 5 years old. I've been having the shit kicked out of me twice a week. Okay. Since I've been 12. Yeah. And I mean, by big dudes. And so, like, on the road, I will tell you, like, I wasn't, now I'd be a hell of a lot more laid back, but I have a pit bull personality, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just who I am. Like, I've had enough of bullshit. Like, we're done. And this is how this is going to fucking go. And I don't need to scream. I've never screamed. If I raise my voice, it comes from my diaphragm and it's really low. Like, there's no high pitch bullshit going on here, but I will tell you that, like, that really helped me. And it helped me, you know, it helped me be decent backup. And it helped me, you know, it helped me with the calls, but also helped me be safer. And it helped me not be a shit show on the calls, where I think, because we, you know, let's be honest, every call's a gun call, right? Because we're on it. And so, like, if you don't have that kind of, like what you said, like critical thinking of like, you know, because I would be, you know, I'm sizing up everybody and I'm like, shit, like, I know what it's like to get punched by you, like, you know, punched in the head by you. Yeah. Like, do we have to, you know? And so, like, you're going through this, whereas you're 100% right. Like, somebody who hasn't dealt it, been, you know, humbled over and over and over again, you're right. The overconfidence and that overcompensation of, like, I'm here, over assertiveness, honestly, it turns us all off. And that's where we develop the bad reputation, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know?
Go ahead, Iman. Sorry.
So just on a kind of different path with that in terms of competency and competent cops and stuff, and this is directly, you know, for female officers, if you speak to them, when you speak to them, coaching them, mm-hmm. I kind of find a polar opposites type with female officers, right? You have female officers who do great job, great work, good to go, and they'll do the job. Awesome. You know, great backup, mm-hmm. you know, trust them 110%. Then you have others who are in reality badge bunnies with badge bunnies. And you're mm-hmm. just like, really? You know, and I deal with it and other guys deal with it. And it's like, now you're the liability that we all talk about. Right. Mm-hmm. And although I don't know whether they realize it or not, but mm-hmm. they're not the ones that I'm going to trust on an armed barricade or I need mm-hmm. something done as a sergeant. Right. If I'm doing something, I'm not going to look to you. Right. You're going to stand in the sidelines unless I need something drastic. Right. And so I don't know, like in your conversation, have you seen that in your conversations?
Well, I think you just opened the door perfectly for me to share with you part two of my life.
Yeah.
So, perfect. Cause that was actually my question.
There you go.
So yeah. So I very much have, I've worked with them, and I have seen them online. So part of when I got injured, right. And I just need to preface this. Like I don't think of myself as America's top cop. Never think I'm perfect. Never thought I did. What I do know about myself is, like I've told you, because of my martial arts career, and that, you know, I know what it took, you know, I know what it took to become an officer that was, you know, decent backup, right? Like guys would call me specifically, I would go cross agency, you know, whatever. I would like to think I was never part of the problem. I was usually part of the solution, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm not perfect and I've made mistakes, like straight up, but here's what I know is, so, you know, when you're an angry 26 and a half year old who just got told your career is fucking done in law enforcement and now you are couch ridden for 6 months, I had a lot of time. I was very depressed. I got diagnosed with PTSD and an anxiety disorder. And I was, like I told you, I was couch ridden long, you know, 15, 20 minutes of sitting. I was done. I was in therapy 5 days a week. I mean, we're talking like I was not in a good place. My husband would like, you know, I would spend days like kind of in bed because I couldn't do shit. I was depressed, all these things. Okay. So I had a lot of time on Instagram and that was bad for me. It was good and bad. And that is where I kind of started, my podcast. So I started the podcast back like, I think in 20, I don't know what year, I can't remember, 2017 or 2018. And it was called Sheepdog Nation. That's how it started. That's what I did. And it started, you can go on there. It's still there today. You can go to zero. You know, the first 20 episodes are me bitching. And I'm very angry, but it was so relatable, you guys, that I couldn't stop. When I did stop, my inbox got flooded with men and women going, oh no, no. Where the fuck do you think you're going? We haven't had anybody talk the way that you talk. Like nobody. And at the time, nobody was out there motherfucking everything, but I wasn't a part of an agency anymore. So it didn't matter. Right.
Yeah.
And part of that was I saw a lot of these badge bunnies and I was completely, completely beside myself. I was like, you give me, like, this was my perspective at 26 and a half, very angry. All of the things that I had just gone through, very scarred. I'm like, you're the problem. You're giving me the bad reputation. You are in such a liability. I would never want you on backup. Like, and I'm just going through everything you just said. And I'm like, I'm angry. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I start making content for this and I'm like, you know, and I'm poking fun. And there was some big influencers who got really mad at little old Autumn, who had 1,000 followers on Instagram, who was a nobody, but they had 100,000 followers and more, and they felt insecure because
good.
I was calling a spade, like, you know, I got the post all still on my Instagram. Like you can go scroll. Like I do a post about nails because one of the things I really don't like, I never did like, I don't like these long female cops who have long painted nails because I don't know how you navigate handcuffs, tasers, your gun, load, reload, fighting. Like, I don't know how you do that. And so at the time I was very judgmental. And so I make a post and I it's my hand with my nails done. And I'm like, this is what Instagram will tell you a female cop looks like. And then I have like my hand, like it's all like just real, real shit. And then yeah. I'm like, but this is what an actual female cop looks like. I broke the fucking internet with that.
That was amazing.
That was so amazing.
Amazing. Everybody was like, they were all freaking out on me. I mean, oh. And I just kind of went on and on for a while. And then from after I stopped being so angry, I started developing a training platform for female officers. And then I shifted my content to really be, it was called the Officer Autumn. It was a brand. It wasn't designed to be like, I'm the Officer Autumn. It was like Officer Autumn was me, but like the brand was all training. And it was really about having the hard conversations with women that nobody was having. Like, hey, put your hair back. You don't need to have the face of where you're going to go on a date when you go to work. Like, you can wear some makeup, but this is not attractive and that's not attractive. And if your shit's not shined, and if you don't have good command presence, and how are you talking? And like, what's your radio voice like? And like, what are you doing? How are you handling, you know, all going out on shift, like, you know, choir practice, like, what are you like? And like, just having these conversations that nobody's having. I did that. And then the world erupted again. I would like to say, I'm going to preface this with, I really believe I had a very positive impact. My inboxes have been flooded. They were flooded. I still do have a full client roster, but at the time I did have a full client roster as well. These women are taking money out of their pocket, a lot of money, to hire me as a coach and have a mentor, because they, and to be around a community of like-minded women so that they could talk. Because what you guys had, what we've talked about, being singled out, being the only woman. I mean, you can't, I'm sorry, but I'm not calling up my sergeant and having real conversations with him about like, hey, how do you think I should act? Or do you think what? You're just not going to do that. So, I still get messages, you guys. It's really means a lot to me, is I still get messages and like with women who will like just graduate the police academy, and they're like, it's your podcast, it's your TikTok, it's all these things that really, really got me through. But what happened in 2022 is the internet broke. And what happened was I got called a fraud. I got called a fake. I faked my injury. I'm actually not a police officer. I never was an officer. I was an auxiliary officer. I was a security officer. I fucked my lieutenant. I fucked my whole department. Of course I did. I faked the back injury is completely fake. Let's see. I have no integrity and I'm a liar. And I'm taking all of these women's money. I'm preying on these women, actually, because they're weak and they're vulnerable and they can't make their own decisions, I guess. And I wish I could say that didn't, you know, really hurt me, but it did. It continues to this day. But the year of 2022, it impacted me on every single level. And it, to me, is the exact same thing that happens in police agencies. It really is. I was out in the public eye, and it magnified for me.
So,
no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, I mean, with that said, though, you still push through, right? That mm-hmm. resiliency for decades that you've been going through shit, right? Even, you know, people don't realize when you start martial arts or something, even as a kid, you have started that journey of building that resiliency, right? That's the thing. Well, and it doesn't have to be martial arts, sports, whatever, but you've started building that resiliency early on in your life. And, you know, post policing, and now 2022, you had that really, you know, again, internet blew up and you went to, would you call it a dark place, or you were just more like, what the fuck?
I wasn't like depressed or I wasn't suicidal. Like, let's just be honest, but yep. I would definitely say I was depressed. And I will tell you this, because to just so the listeners, so you can understand what was going on. It was, swarms of these meme pages of, I guess I can't name them because we're not going to put them on blast, but there's meme.
Oh no, fuck that. If they did this, fucking send it. That's oh, a different level of blast. Fuck them.
We'll send it. So 10, 8 memes. There's podcasts about me. They're all talking about me. And I have no idea. Poorly made police memes. Memes about me, and they don't even know me. And I remember, like, he got mad at me. He got mad because he said that everything that I'm selling, I should be giving away for free.
As he's selling his own product.
Right. And I'm sorry, but like, are we going to say that about every single business owner? Yeah. Like, so what determined what I was doing any different than, you know, mentors and stuff? And it men that are fucking teaching how to pass these entrance exams. Like, oh, well, that should be free. Shouldn't that be free? Why should we have to pay for that?
Yeah.
Like, how about all these cops that are fitness coaches? Oh, well, that should be free too. So, and I mean, and then, you know, and at the time I was an instructor for a well-known police training agency. And it got so bad when they announced that I was their trainer from, I don't know who, again, it was these, well, and you have to understand, like, these meme pages were trying to be in with this, and like, they were trying really hard to be in with this company. And I know that they were, so like, anything they could do to get their leg up is what they did, and which whatever. And then we had a lot of fake, and we still do a lot of like profiles that nobody will own, nobody mm-hmm. will put a name to, and they're just spewing all these memes and all this shit about me. But the thing is within the law enforcement community, it took off because nobody has a brain cell to go, you know what? I'm actually going to call the Maine Criminal Justice Academy, and I'm going to find out, like, was she a cop? Is she a cop? Like, what is her, you know? And so somebody could have done that because it's all public record. It's all right there, right? Like, you could find out. I don't even know what auxiliary cop was, but I saw that more times in these memes. I'm like, what is an auxiliary cop? But apparently that's what I was. That's all I've ever been.
Yeah. That's a rent-a-cop, basically. That's all that is.
Okay. See, I don't even know. We don't have those.
Or a different version of saying reserve, as though they're not sworn officers, you know,
it's
required
it's
to perform the duty of a police officer because you're.
Usually they get used for like at parades. They'll get used for parades, like blocking traffic. They do the work that full-time officers during like parades and stuff. Well, that can't do because they need to fill in more critical positions. So that's basically auxiliary. And they're all volunteers.
Oh, yeah. So, because currently what I hold is I am a part-time police officer in the state of Maine. I hold those certifications just because I went through, you know, I was a full-time. I have the 18-week, it's called a blue pin in Maine.
Okay.
And there was a chief who heard about me getting injured and stuff. And he's like, hey, I just need some, could you come and work for me? And I just want you to like run the internet, like run our social media and do like community policing. So I technically still am a police officer in the state of Maine, but it was just so funny because the whole internet was like, so I just stopped like fighting it. And honestly, you know, we talk about bullying, we talk about all those things. Yeah. I mean, in 2022, I mean, that went on for the whole year. So I lost that opportunity to work with that training company because they felt it was not good for their reputation. They did not do a background check on me. They did not check any of this and stand by me. And they are a powerhouse and definitely could have fucking put this to bed, but they did not do that. So then it intensified.
Yeah.
I got an opportunity to speak at a military and first responder event in Chicago. It was called Roger Up. And when they would advertise that I was speaking, the DMs that the event coordinators would get was just insane. I can't believe you're going to have her, female cops reaching out and being like the veteran ones, right? Yeah. Like who know everything. Can't believe you're going to have her, blah, blah, blah. They ended up, Jason Redman, and I think you guys know him, retired Navy SEAL. He ends up like, all right, enough is enough. Like, you're either bullshit or you're not, and I'm going to find out. So he ends up conducting a full background on me. Like he calls my old partner, like my old road partner talks to my former bosses, talks to like all these people. And he's like, yeah. So the only thing that I found out is that when you were 20 years old, you, had a mishap. What happened was I slept with a deputy when I was 20 years old. Okay. And there's a whole big story to it, way more to the story than what I'm going to put on the air, yeah. But I've owned it. I've never hit it. I'm like, yeah, I made a mistake. It's why I teach the girls that I do. I ruined my fucking reputation the first 3 months on the job, literally fucking in the trash can. But guess what? I fought every single day for years to build it back up. And I did. And I had a lot of officers, senior officers telling me, you need to go move south. You need to do this. You need to do that. And I didn't. I stayed for 2 years and I built it right back up to being respectful. And I did. And it was, yeah. Which is why I can attest to that. But so, you know, Jay was like, yeah, that's the only thing I could find. I provided him all of my back injury stuff, like just all this stuff. And I'm sorry, I'm going on and on because it really, when you fuck with somebody like that, like people don't get it. And people are like, well, Autumn, it was just internet bullying. It wasn't just internet bullying. I couldn't go anywhere. There was no, I went absolutely nowhere. I don't know who's doing this. Somebody messages Jason and tells him that, give like this whole story about me, which this person knew me because some of it was true, right? Some like, but it was just taken out of context.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then admits, and then Jay goes, perfect. Can you send me your resume? And this person goes, well, I don't want to do that because I work with her husband. And so if I do that, then they're going to know who I am. So now, you know, so now we know somebody who works with my husband is out for me and we don't have any idea why, and they don't have the balls to write. So when you're going through something like that, that is absolutely devastating. And here's what I can tell you is I have pivoted and I've rebuilt. I stood strong. I continued to help women. I continued to do what I do. And I can say that the tide's turning. You know, having somebody as respectable and credible as Jason Redman stand by my side and be like, fuck you guys, because none of it's true, was incredible. And so, you know, he knows, like, I owe him. He says I don't, but I do. And I tell him that, like, loyal to the end for me, like, whatever you need, Jay, you Navy SEAL, you, like, I'll do it. And, you know, and he's incredible. And, but, you know, honestly, you guys, I just never stopped with my focus and my purpose. And like I told you about an hour ago, for somebody who is going through shit at your agency, what's going to get you through is being focused on your purpose. And that is what has gotten me through. Now I'm very proud to tell you that, I'm growing a women's self-protection company. I still train police officers. I've traveled around the country in 2023. I've spoke and trained female officers. It was and I'd like to say this, the first agency I ever worked for called me and I fucking trained all their female officers. And I was like, you know, where is this on the internet? Like, come here, my haters. I'm such a piece of shit and such a fraud that the first agency I ever worked for called me right up and said, we want to put like 20 women through your training. And I was like, you know, that's incredible. And so, you know, I've done all that and I'm building this company and I'm focused on really helping the civilian world, you know, learn a little bit about what we know about situational awareness and protecting themselves. And, you know, you guys, it's doing very well.
Oh. Yeah, no, you've been crushing on that end. I mean, literally you answered 7 of my questions that I had for the last, you know, bit here, because you are transferring that knowledge over to the civilian side. And this is probably a whole other podcast with regards to independent resiliency, independent capability, you know, being your own first responder is very marketable now. And it's also very polarizing. But you've done a remarkable job of transferring the knowledge you obtained, good and bad, through law enforcement, through those interactions, you know, a very intense, even though albeit brief, but a very intense career into the private sector, because just because they're not wearing a badge or they're not, you know, women in particular, because of who you're working with, they're facing similar, not same, but similar type challenges and insecurities also, mm-hmm. right? I can't protect myself. I am in fear. I can either be in fear and be dependent, or I can be in fear and be independent. And the ones that obviously are working to or working towards working with you are the ones that want to be independently capable mm-hmm. or more capable. And, you know, to the tone of your page and everything else, an asset, not just to themselves, but to their family and their community mm-hmm. as citizens. And there's this, you're doing a remarkable job of bridging that conversation, because for so long, it's always been, I don't want to say us versus them, but I mean, for a very long time, there was blue and there's everybody else, right? Firefighters, yes. Kind of, sort of, we're sort of on the same team, but really it's blue and you, right? And I think that those lines are blurring a little bit more, because you've got people who've gone through careers that, you know, maybe coming out the back end of it, like, hey, this is fucked. Like, this mm-hmm. is why we're having problems, you know, interfacing with our community. And then on the community side, not understanding what police are doing. And that's part of the, you know, the whole purpose of this podcast is, like, we know that, you know, civilians are listening. Not that we're going to give away TTPs or anything like that, but just in the sense of, like, hey, this is why officers do what they do. This is how we're building towards a better officer, a better community police officer, because the number one thing at the end of the day is we all live together. You know, we all need to coexist in a way that is empowering for everybody, not, you know, repressive. And I need to not go too far off of this, because I fucking hate Instagram and I hate social media. Mm-hmm. The flip side of that, though, is I'm not a fucking idiot. And I understand that that is where commerce is, and that is what sells. And that is every fucking product on the planet is sold through social media now. And if you want to be independently employed, as in not a municipal worker for a city or a county, you better fucking have a presence on there, and you better work it, because no one's going to buy anything from you.
Right.
And there's just no way to, you know, you can't take out a billboard ad. You can't take it. Nobody has magazines anymore. Everything is digital. Everything is online. Everything's on social media. And unfortunately, it's also a fucking wasteland for dipshits and people that hide behind fucking, you know, bullshit meme pages. And yes, memes are funny. I mean, memes can and often are funny, but you have to also take that into consideration. That is also a person. That is also a person who, you know, while people are making fun of it, it's not always just for fun. Sometimes it literally is to cause harm and do damage. And I just don't think people do a very good job of filtering that much anymore, because they just want to, they want to see things burn. And it's really hard, because I, you know, if I could EMP all social media and just nuke it all, the best day of all was like a year and a half ago, was when Instagram went down for 24 hours. People fucking lost their shit. Yep. They completely lost their mind. I'm just sitting there like, yes, please keep it off. Let it roll. Mm-hmm. And you know, what's going to come out of that on the back end. Okay. The back end of it is you've got your network, you've got your people that, you know, you're going to be okay. Right. Because you're integrated with their life. You're integrated with their community. At the end of the day, our circle is still our circle. And as long as you're doing the right thing, they will always be there for you. But that's not to discount the damage that, you know, social media and, you know, I guess you could say public harassment, public bullying does. It's very real. I just wish people were a little more conscientious about it, but then also being conscientious as a consumer, like, hey, what am I looking at? You know, the gun bunny. I mean, we joke about it, but it's like, yeah, the gun bunny concept, or the anybody and everybody can be a trainer out there, right? Anybody can train law, anybody. You can put up a fucking thing, you can do great marketing, and your content fucking sucks. Mm-hmm. We combat that. We have, there's an entity that's, I mean, infinitely larger than us. And there are people who've taken courses from them. They're like, dude, they literally just lifted this right out of your curriculum, copy and paste. Like, yeah, I know. Like, I know. The difference is that we coach it better, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, people can acquire that knowledge, even with what you do. People can acquire that knowledge because we have the internet. But can they coach it? Can they disseminate it? Can they empower with it? Are they any good at it? Most mm-hmm. of the time, not. You know, if they're really good at sales, a lot of times they're not quite as good at the delivery side. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I think that's where you come in. Above and beyond everybody else, is you're a really good fucking coach. You really are. And that's what I see. I mean, obviously I, you know, watch for the highlight reel stuff, 'cause it's, you know, you want to see the good things. I get the negative side is it's easy to find negative. Like but you know, seeing what people are leaving you and going out in the world and the successes that they're having is, I mean, not that we mean, you know, our opinion means anything here, but that's really why, you know, we're just excited that we know you, because it's pretty awesome to be surrounded by people that are way smarter than us and better at everything that we do.
I wouldn't say that. Not for me, but I appreciate your support. And And I really do. And I appreciate you paying attention to my social.
Absolutely. So we want to be respectful of your time. Cause I mean, obviously, you know, we keep going on this topic for hours. Two things. One, where can everybody find you on Instagram, or, you know, your TikTok and everything else?
Yeah. So, you can find me at the Autumn Clifford on Instagram, Autumn Clifford on TikTok. And I have a podcast and a website and, a female Facebook community, and I have all sorts of shit under She's an Asset. So just look up She's an Asset as well.
Perfect. And then the last question, we ask this for everybody. Obviously, a lot of people listen to this when they're going on shift, or they might be on shift having lunch or whatnot. And we try to get, hey, one thing that somebody who's listening tonight, whether it's female or male officer, one thing that they can do on shift today that'll make them 1% better on this shift or even going into the next shift tomorrow. What's one thing that you would like them to know?
I want them to breathe. Take some deep breaths and breathe. So many times, you know, how many times do we, number one, we get tunnel vision. Number two, we're chest breathing. We're really chest breathing. We're stressed right out. We're making decisions not from a grounded place and not from, you know, like our gut. And we're just knee jerk reactions, right? We're coming off of this call, that call, you know, as Eamon said, you know, dealing with, you know, just different, you know, officers coming to you, you know, all these things. And we're really in our heads. My suggestion is really breathe. If you're listening to this right now, take a nice deep breath and try to take more throughout your shift. And I really believe that you are going to find yourself a little bit less stressed out and far more grounded.
Crushed it. Eamon, we need to get out of the way of all of our guests. Just let them run this show. That was unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Autumn, thank you so much for all the time. Really, honestly, this has been, I really wish we could go for 5 more hours.
Yeah, so Autumn, hang out for a minute. We're going to wrap up, but just hang out. We'll talk offline for a second. But thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So Jake,
wouldn't be possible, man. Wouldn't be possible, dude. This has been quite the year, and you know, I got to thank you, as always, for giving me a chance in the side seat here to just make myself better. I mean, forget about everything else we're doing for everybody else. I mean, shit, I feel better.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, everybody that we've talked to so far reminds me of something Marcus Aurelius says. And he says, let no act be done without purpose. And that's it. Have that purpose, right?
Having
that's
that
all
purpose.
It is.
Yeah. That's awesome. I mean, and you know, the other thing Marcus Aurelius said was head over to AAApoliceSupply.com for all the duty gear you need. Use that code HYBRID10 for every single order you make. Big thanks to them and all of our supporters for helping us get out here and having conversations like this, especially our good friends over at the Havoc Journal, the voice of the veteran community, focusing on those current affairs and articles of interest to the public in general, but the veteran community specifically. Check them out at HavocJournal.com and check out their podcast at the Profiles in Havoc podcast as well. Big thanks to Second Mission Foundation for educating, elevating, and advocating for our service community. Check them out and learn more at SecondMissionFoundation.org. At the same time, or when you get done with that, head over to 22mohawks.com and learn how they're combating veteran suicide by providing assistance to those veterans needing help navigating the re-entry into the civilian world at 22mohawks.com. Big thanks to Kyle Lamb and Viking Tactics, his company, the best tactical gear anywhere. Battle belts and slings, everything in between. If you need high quality battle proven tactical gear, it is only available at vikingtactics.com. And of course, we want to thank our friends at the Overwatch Project. Head over to overwatchproject.org for more information on how to form workable plans of action and how to just fucking ask. Eamon, dude, crushed it.
Yeah, another great episode. So hope you
another
guys,
one. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It was great. And everybody else out there, we appreciate you listening in, and make sure and stay safe.
Stay safe, Ian.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the She's an Asset podcast. If you wouldn't mind, could you please share this out? The only way we grow and I can get this out to as many people as possible is with your help. So we're kind of in this together. And the good thing is I know you have my back. So I want to say thank you and ask for you to share the show. And if we're not hanging out in the socials, I hope that you'll come and hang out with me. I'm Autumn Clifford pretty much everywhere. Thank you so much. See you next time.